Committee on Early Childhood and Youth Development will come to order, and Representative Moran moves the minutes of March 18th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. Then the chair will move House File 2115 as amended, and it be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. And we did discuss it yesterday. It turned out that there was, we need one amendment. So the chair will move on line 2.27, strike the word East African, and insert instead New Americans. Does everybody see that?
Mr. Chair, it's also on line 2.31.
Oh, thank you. So the chair changed his motion so that, is it another page?
7 through 9.
Is there another one? Oh, yes. Thank you, Kathy. Representative Clark, it's also on 29.
Well, you're right. Sorry. Thank you.
Representative Briner caught that one.
Right.
31.
It's just that, and Mr. Chairman, it's 31. A broader term. That's the reason why we're doing it. It's broader than just East African.
So, members, the chair will change his motion, withdraw his motion, and now the motion is on lines 27, 29, and 31. The two words East African will be replaced by the two words New Americans. Okay, all in favor of that amendment say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. Okay. We thoroughly discussed this yesterday, and I think everybody's now in accord. Representative Myra?
I'd like to offer an oral amendment, please.
I'm sorry, what?
May I offer an oral amendment before we vote?
Yes. Go ahead and do the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I would like to strike lines 1.20 and 1.21 and return it to the current effective date in statute, which is July 1st, 2014. Oh. My understanding is that this has been in place since 2011. I'd like a roll call, please.
Okay. Representative Myra requests a roll call. I want to remind everyone that this was an amendment that was agreed to by everybody, including the department, and they felt that that they should have the study, which is done in Section 3, before making a final decision on cutting something like that out. So unless there's further discussion, I think we'll call the roll.
Chair Mulery?
No.
Representative Lane?
No.
Representative Myra?
Yes.
Representative Barrett?
Yes.
Representative Briner?
No.
Representative Franzen? Representative Franzen? Representative Howe? Representative Howe? Representative Crescia?
Yes.
Representative Moline? Representative Moline? Representative Moran?
No.
Representative Radinovich? Representative Radinovich? Representative Winkler? Representative Winkler?
The motion fails 3-4. Okay, with that, the chair will renew his motion to move House File 2115 as amended, and that be re-referred to the Health and Human Services Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. No. Carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, appreciate it.
Is Representative Labeling here someplace? Thought I saw her.
There she is.
Oh, there she is. The chair will... move House File 1966 and that it be re-referred to Committee on Health and Human Services Policy. And then Representative Liebling, it's my understanding that you'd agree to Amendment A2.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And so all in favor of that say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no. Carries. Thank you, Representative Liebling. Go ahead and present.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. Members, this is a really important bill. I think by this point in our history, it's indisputable that secondhand smoke is a very harmful substance. And in the Health and Human Service Policy Committee, when we heard about e-cigs, every single person was talking about how much, or there was no dispute among the people there that smoke, burning tobacco products, contain many harmful things and that the impact on human health is very well documented. What this bill does is to address the exposure of children in foster care to secondhand smoke. Many of the children who come into foster care in the state are coming, as you know, out of very bad family situations. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't be in foster care. Many of these children come with existing health conditions. One of the most prevalent of these is asthma. But, of course, there are many other health conditions, too, that can affect the children who are ours to care for in the state's care because they're in foster care. So these are children that the state is paying for their care. The care is overseen by counties. So what this bill does is to say that children in foster care, to the extent possible, should not be exposed to secondhand smoke. Now, the amendment that we put on the bill is a result of conversations both in the Health and Human Service Policy Committee, where members asked to have certain things clarified, and the chair's request that we make it very clear in the bill that the smoking issue is not the only issue that is going to be considered. And this is something that we have testifiers. We have a testifier from the AMC to talk about the county's perspective. But the idea is that under the language that the chair wanted to add, and I'm very supportive of it, I think it clarifies the bill, is that if the child's best interests are served by placing them in a particular home, and that home does have exposure to secondhand smoke, that the county would not certainly not be precluded from putting them there. That wouldn't be a reason that the county would deny placement in that home if they otherwise feel that it's in the child's best interest. So that's pretty much what the bill is. I think the language is pretty clear. And in fact, when I've talked to people about this, most people that I've talked to are actually rather shocked that we do allow smoking in foster homes and that there isn't any statewide policy about this. In fact, many counties already have this policy. This just really extends it statewide and makes it very clear that we, the state, believe that when a child is in our custody, that we believe this is an important principle, that a child should not be exposed to secondhand smoke if it can be avoided, because it does have very devastating health impacts on children, especially children who already have pre-existing conditions. And incidentally, we, the state, are paying for the care that the children need. So even apart from the
health and humanitarian issue. There's a cost issue here that we should try to protect children from secondhand smoke wherever we're able to do that. So I do have some testifiers. Mr. Chair, I wasn't sure how much testimony you wanted to take on the bill. If members would like probably more articulate and more informed information than I can give you, I certainly have people here who are happy to do that.
Representative Murray, you have a question? Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, could you, and maybe you have a testifier that could answer this question for me, does your bill or is there already statute that protects a child in foster care from the smoke up from marijuana?
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And
alcohol abuse, other substance abuse, is there anything?
Well, maybe the counties could answer that more specifically, but there are standards about being a licensed foster family, and there are inspections of the home. And, of course, marijuana smoke is illegal, so if somebody is committing illegal acts in their home, I can't believe that that isn't already grounds to and wouldn't continue to be grounds to take the child out of a home, because many of these children are coming from homes where there was illegal activity. So licensed foster homes are inspected and they are regulated. So this is not something new in the sense of that they're not regulated and we're going to impose a regulation. This is just adding to the standards for being a licensed foster home.
Thank you.
Representative Moline?
For Representative Myra's sake, you'll be happy to know that in my medical marijuana bill, it's specifically prohibited to smoke marijuana in front of children ever, even if you have a prescription. So I just wanted to make sure that you knew that.
Thank you for clarification.
Mr. Chair, may I ask more questions?
Before we take any testimony?
Maybe we won't need to take testimony. Okay. You were wondering about.
Representative Myra.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, I was wondering how many families would be impacted by this or how many children. I support your bill. I'm just curious.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative Myra. I think I'd need to phone a friend for that one. I don't know the number offhand, but I'm sure we can get that for you.
Is there somebody that has that information? There comes someone. Is that? Yeah, I think so.
Mr. Chair, I'm Judith Brumfield. I'm the Director of Health and Human Services in Scott County, and I'm representing counties through the Minnesota Association of County Social Services Directors and the Association of Minnesota Counties. So hopefully I can speak to some of those questions regarding children in foster care.
Did you hear the question?
Yes.
Could you answer it?
Mr. Chair, Representative, in terms of the exact number, I cannot tell you. I can assure you that a minority of the foster parents within Minnesota at this time have smoking within their homes. It's really something that counties have discouraged for a long time. Our concern about this bill as it originally came forward and our support for it as amended really has to do with our ability to look at the needs of the child, putting the obvious issue with secondhand smoke at the forefront and being able to address that through our home studies when we're licensing. But the counties that have already instituted this kind of a policy within the counties have found that it is not an issue, that we don't have very many foster homes now who have smoking, and those who do are usually more than willing to look at how they can maintain a smoke-free atmosphere around the children. So exact numbers I don't have, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Myra.
Representative Liebling. I guess my concern is I wouldn't want us to have a situation of crisis where there aren't enough foster homes because, of course, we want children to be placed and not be denied, but we also don't want them to have the health risk. So thank you.
Representative Myra, that was a major concern of mine, especially within certain communities of color where there's, at least I've heard, that there's much heavier smoking, and there was, and where there's hard to get foster homes. So that was one of my concerns in on having the amendment done. So are there other, what, Representative Moline? I think you're next on the list. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out, and maybe Representative Liebling mentioned this in her opening comments that I missed, and I apologize if you did, but there are already three counties that have smoke-free foster care, and St. Louis County, where I live, has had it for a number of years, and I don't think that they have suffered any consequences because of having that policy in place. So there are a few counties that have been doing this for quite some time.
Representative Kreisha.
And thank you, Chair Mullery, and thank you, Representative Liebling, for bringing the bill forward. I think your opening comments about the indisputable effects of secondhand smoke is right on. There's no question, and the fact that we're seeing a decline in acceptance as well as culturally. However, we're here to write policy, and I have a couple of inconsistent. I mean, if we were to make a broad policy, as you said, with the counties that said we discourage it or no smoking for foster care, I think that would be probably more acceptable. But this one has a couple inconsistencies. For example, are children placed in Native American homes immune to the adverse effects of secondhand smoke?
Representative Liebling?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing that up. You know, it's there's only so far the state can go.
I mean, exactly.
Yeah, and I mean, this is we want to have a policy that says we absolutely think that children should not be exposed in foster homes to smoke. But you know, and you're right, there are some exceptions in the bill. One of them is the one that we discussed in the amendment with the chair, that there may be situations where it's really, even notwithstanding the health risk from smoke, that it's really in the child's best interest to be placed there. So I think whenever we do policy, whatever area we're making policy in, there are always lines that have to be drawn, and one interest pushes up another interest, and certainly you're seeing that in this bill. It's not a blanket prohibition. Some of us might prefer that it was, because all children should have the same protection from the health risk, but I think the bill takes us about as far as we're able to go, and I think something is better than nothing.
Representative Creed.
And exactly, thank you, Chair Mullery, and exactly to that point, I actually can't support the bill because of the inconsistencies. We either accept the fact that it's harmful or we accept the fact that it's not. We have exceptions for relatives and for Native Americans, and which kids do we get to choose get to bypass the safety valve? And that's bothersome. So either this is harmful and it should be applied that way, or it's not, and we're making exceptions. I can't live in that gray world on this issue. So,
And that's a statement, I think, not a question. And
however you want to
take care. And Representative Kreisha, we always have to find things that aren't one way or the other, 100%. Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, Representative Kreisha kind of stated my concerns as well, just a few inconsistencies of the bill, but you answered. Thank you.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Liebling, for bringing this bill forward. I think the state do have a responsibility to make sure when we're pulling kids out of homes that we are placing them in safe homes that doesn't cause health issues. But in saying that, I think what we also know and what data tells us is that kids thrive better when they are connected to families and relatives, and that cultural piece is also connected to their placement, and that has to be a priority as we take kids out of unhealthy homes, that we can consider putting them with relatives first, because that is data shows that it's really connected to them thriving and being connected to their community, being connected to family, being connected to culture is a very important piece of their development. And so for that to be an exception, you know, is too part of the well-being of that child in placement.
Thank you. Sure. Represent. Representative Kreischer on point?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Kreischer.
Thank you, Chair Mullery. And I appreciate we are coming, Representative Moran, but I would like to see the data that says the long-term effects of asthma or many of the other breathing things outweigh the effects of putting someone in a home with a family. I don't think there's a no net gain there. I don't think the data is there. I'd love to see a longitudinal study. I think we're making an assumption that somebody who's going to have a long-term health for a short-term period of being with a relative, I just don't buy that exception. I'd have to see the data.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and not to debate this, but I don't think we're saying that we're going into households, parents who has the parental rights of their own child to say to that parent of that child, you cannot smoke neither, right? I don't think we're at the state going into that piece of legislation to go into personal households and tell parents and fathers and moms and dads and aunts that they cannot smoke in their homes. You know, but what we are talking about, and maybe the state knows better than I, but what we're saying, when we place kids out of homes into foster care, the research says that it's better suitable to place them with families, members.
Okay. Representative Biner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Liebling, I don't know if you have anyone here who can actually testify to this, but the issue was raised about the exception for Native American traditional or religious ceremonies, and because they're of another order than simply smoking in your home and maybe very rarely are done indoors, I would just appreciate if someone could speak to that.
Ms. Brownfield?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, the language is very clear. It does not say that you can smoke if you are Native American. It says that it would not interfere with traditional or spiritual Native American or religious ceremony use of tobacco. And that is not the same as smoking cigarettes. There is certainly a small amount of secondhand smoke, but it is very sporadic. It is not something that happens all the time or around children. And many of those ceremonies, you're correct, are outdoors.
Thank you. Okay. I don't see any more. Representative Liebling, unless you feel compelled, I don't think we need any more testimony, do we? I'm seeing that we don't need it. Yeah, we'll have to ask if anybody in the public wants to testify on this bill. Doesn't look like a rush. Then the chair would renew his motion that House File 1966, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Policy. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no?
No.
Here, carries.
Thank you.
We're going to start with House File 2302. So, Representative Mueller moves House File 2302 will be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Policy. Representative Mueller?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill just tries to correct a little computational problem that's created by the present law as to when children are or aren't under the law for receiving the money, and so this would just clear it up by setting it at the school age. And Lisa Thompson, a child care provider from, I believe, St. Paul, if I remember right, yes, is here to explain the exact problem that's occurring right now.
Okay, go ahead. Introduce yourself and go ahead.
And oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
You have.
I should have moved Amendment A1.
All right.
To get it in the form that the author would prefer. Basically, it gets rid of all of Section 2.
Okay, Representative Mulry moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. Passed.
Thank you. Thanks.
Okay, I introduce yourself and go ahead.
Hi, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to be here today to testify in support of House File 2302. Excuse me. My name is Lisa Thompson. I am a licensed family child care provider in St. Paul, and my testimony is on behalf of members and supporters of Family Child Care Organization, Child Care Providers Together. Now, first, let me address the simplest part of this bill, and it's defining when a child is categorized as a preschooler and a school-ager in a family child care setting. And the bill will simplify and streamline the age categories. A child is an infant until the first birthday, a toddler until the second birthday, and a child, a preschooler until the fifth birthday, and a school-ager until the 10th birthday. That's what this bill would do. And at the 10th birthday, then the child is no longer counted in the allowable licensing ratios for family child care. Now, currently, a child continues to be counted as a preschooler until 4 months prior to the first day of kindergarten, when the child is eligible to attend kindergarten in the fall. The definition is understandable for school-based programs that operate on a school-based calendar, or for programs that separate children into age categories, exclusive age groups. But family child care providers operate like a family, and siblings are rarely born according to a school calendar, and all children are grouped in one small group together regardless of their age. Now, there are other states that follow this simplified model for family child care ratios. Accreditation and rating tools assess how well a provider blends the various ages according to children's individual needs and not according to a child's eligibility for public school enrollment. And I hope that you will support this simplification. Now, the section of the bill, I would just like to add a little comment that the section of the bill, that we wish to be set aside is an effort to address the use of substitutes and to pull together all the pieces floating around between rule and statute.
We only address the bill that we're facing.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for allowing me to be here today.
All right. Any in committee members would like to comment on this? And any other testifiers? Anybody in the audience? Okay, we're ready to vote. All those in favor of Representative Mulry moves that House File 2302 be referred to the Health and Human Services Policy Committee as amended. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. Motion is adopted.
Thank you.
Prevails.
Madam Chair, could we do 2583 next?
2583 is up next. Representative Mulry moves House File 2583 be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Representative Mulry?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is, I think, a really important bill for our future, just as this committee is basically set up to look at developing everything about a child from zero to adulthood. And really the state has been neglecting youth outside of the K-12 classroom. And so the purpose of this bill is to recognize all the outstanding things that can be done on helping youth develop into successful adults outside of the classroom and outside of school. And actually, there's many studies now showing that that is the time when more of your executive brain function and innovative brain function developments occur. And so we need to actually start trying to help develop this. I was fortunate to get to meet Lasse Cerulla, who was the head of youth development for the Council of Europe for 12 years when he was here for 2 weeks about 6 years ago. And he said that in Europe this is really extremely highly regarded, and you have majors and doctorates just in development of the executive brain function through outside activities. And so what I'm trying to do is help ignite After School, which is an organization of these, or an association of the organizations that are working on this. And I'm not sure who all the testifiers are. I know one, but so if they would all come up. Sure, bring up.
All right, who would like to go first? Introduce yourself.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you so much for allowing me to testify in support of House File 2583. My name is Carrie Dennison-Kanine, and I'm the Executive Director of Ignite After School. We are Minnesota's statewide after school network. We are a network of funders, program providers, researchers, and many other stakeholders that are engaged in after school and summer learning opportunities for young people in Minnesota. We at Ignite work together around partnerships across the state to ensure programs have resources to ensure they're high quality, and also around policy issues. I want to start before specifically talking about the bill to just define what we think of as after school at Ignite. We define after school as those coordinated opportunities for young people that happen before school, after school, during the summer, and on other no school days. This is often also called out of school time. These opportunities occur in multiple settings, from park and recreation centers to school buildings, museums, libraries, and community-based organizations and community settings, and are often for young people between the ages of 5 and 21, although we at Ignite particularly focus on school-aged youth between kindergarten and 12th grade. I want to speak specifically to the focus on 21st century skills and talk a little bit about why should we care and pay attention to 21st century skill building and define a little bit about what that means. We think about 21st century skills as things like critical thinking, decision making, communication skills. And the main reason we want to pay attention to that is particularly because employers are calling for it. There is a partnership at the national level called the Partnership for 21st Century Skills that was brought together by Apple, Microsoft, and Disney Corporation, particularly to raise awareness about the importance of 21st century skills and paying an intentional focus to these skill development as employers are particularly interested in them. Also, in 2010, the Association of American Colleges and Universities surveyed 302 employers and found that 81% of them are particularly looking for folks with critical thinking skills. 70% are looking for employees who can be innovative and think creatively. And 79% want staff with previous experience applying knowledge and skills to real-world settings. And here in Minnesota, the Department of Employment and Economic Development put out a manufacturer's skills gap report in 2011 that showed that 40%
of employers in manufacturing said that there was a skills gap in problem solving, which is a 21st century skill. So we have a robust body of research that shows that after school is particularly positioned to help people, to help young people build these skills, because it has an intentional focus on these types of skill development. I'm very excited to be here to support this bill and to also share that there's been a decrease in funding for after school at the state level. The Minnesota Department of Education puts out an out-of-school time funding streams report that shows that over the past 5 years, our major sources of funding for after school have dropped by $11.4 million, and we rely more on federal than state and private funds for the first time in this five-year period. Also, the major source of federal funding, 21st Century CCLC, or Community Learning Centers grants, there were 71 applications in the last round, and we were only able to fund 16. So it shows that there's great need and demand across the state for these kinds of learning opportunities, but a limited number of resources to support them. So I hope that you will really consider supporting House File 2583, and thank you for your time. I want to introduce Katie Williams, who's the Director for Community Education at Hopkins Public School.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you very much for allowing me the opportunity to testify with you today. Particularly, I'm...
Start with your name, please.
Oh, thank you.
For the record.
Thank you. Katie Williams, Director of Community Education for Hopkins Public Schools. In particular, I'm testifying in support of House File 2583 on behalf of school-based models. As you may know, community education programs exist in nearly every Minnesota school district and provide high-quality after-school, before-school, and summer learning experiences for young people. This statewide delivery model has the capacity and the infrastructure to deliver cost-effective, quality programming for all Minnesota children. In most school districts across Minnesota, there is a growing opportunity gap between those families that can afford quality experiences for their children and those that cannot. Those that cannot, typically those barriers are cost of the program, transportation, and other family issues. So now I want you to think about your typical elementary school. In Hopkins, we're trying to transform a series of disparate programs between before and after and summer and a typical school day. And I want you to think about a school day that for some kids begins at 6:30 in the morning and ends at 6 o'clock in the evening. This formal traditional school day is approximately 8 to 3:30. And before and after school is a combination of parents of children who are enrolled in our school age care program, or a wide variety of enrichment and service learning opportunities that are typically very hands-on and experiential. In addition, there are children referred by their classroom teacher who need academic support, typically in math, reading, and writing. Students enrolled in all of these out-of-school time programs may flow between and among the academic, the enrichment, childcare, and those service opportunities. Picture also that the school is a secured, locked-down environment from 6:30 in the morning until 6 p.m., and all of the adults are coordinating a seamless system of learning and activity in that building. All students receive breakfast before school and a healthy snack after school, and the same behavior management system is implemented from sunup to sundown. Out-of-school activities, both free and fee-based, embrace all kinds of learning styles, involve hands-on experiential learning with low staff-to-student ratios, and all teachers are licensed with qualified child care and other service providers. The out-of-school time curriculum includes all of the elements of the 21st century skill-building traits that Carrie mentioned, and it supports and enhances the K-12 curriculum. We involve a variety of science, technology, engineering, and math activities, service opportunities, leadership development, and always it's about fun. We know that that our young people will need to gain these skills as they move out of school-based systems into whatever post-secondary world welcomes them. Students enrolled in our out-of-school time programs have demonstrated improved attendance and behavior, In Hopkins, we have some data, fabulous data, that shows improved reading and math scores. Participation in our programs are absolutely dependent upon transportation, access to healthy food, low staff to student ratios, quality materials for kids. Now, the funding for all of our work has been a patchwork of targeted services dollars from the state that get reimbursed, our existing staffing structure with our child care program, our partnerships with faith communities, Park and Rec, city police, other school funding sources like the Integration Fund, Local Collaborative Time Study, and then writing many, many grants to make the dollars work. The state provides two levies to community education to support after-school work. In Hopkins, that equates to about $100,000. We have 7,800 students, so it's about $13 per student per year to fund all of these activities. We are simply an example of one school-based model, and there are many, many community-based models that do great work with kids. We know that these programs build a great sense of community and pride for kids. They're safe environments for students, and they're staffed by caring adults. Any additional funding will go a long way in increasing this participation and closing our opportunity gap. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. And our last testifier?
I'd like to introduce Fatuma Abdi, who's a senior at South High School.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Fatuma Abdi, and I'm a senior at South High. I have been participating in plenty of after-school programs from Beacons in middle school through Trio Upward Bound through high school and Minneapolis Youth Congress. I'm also a member of the Education Committee. These after-school programs have taught me plenty of things that are needed that you can't learn outside of your classroom, like social skills, communication skills, and like overall becoming a leader and being able to advocate for yourself. These are things that are not taught in classrooms and that are taught only in after-school programs. Also, one thing that I've benefited from after-school programs is tutoring, because I've needed help with academic help, but at home my parents don't speak English, so that was the only place where I was able to get help. Also, you learn to be able to build relationships and bond, basically having that communication skills that is needed in society, employers are looking for. Another thing is that after-school programs usually are for, usually you get to use your creative mind, and during school you only use one side of your mind, which is like the academic, where 2 + 2 = 4 and things like that. You're being able to use your creative side, so that's one thing else I've benefited from there. Thank you so much for letting me testify, and I hope you support the bill.
Hey, thank you very much. Committee members, let's see, Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm going to start by saying I'm a huge supporter of what I've come to call out-of-school programming or activity, because from my perspective, after-school is a or school-based a small piece of what those opportunities might be in school. Communities have constructed those in very different ways. So I have a couple of concerns about the bill, not the overall intent or goal. But first of all, I find it a little bit troubling when you talk about critical thinking, innovation, problem solving, collaboration, and socialization, as though those weren't taught in the K-12 system. And in fact, I have my whole approach to rethinking K-12 is to put all of those, what you're calling 21st century skills, at the heart of our educational system, because all the things you're talking about, hands-on learning, flexible models, all that should be in the whole day of a student's learning environment, not just in after-school or out-of-school programming. And it's critical that that happen, because that's the major body of time we have our students. So we've got to be doing that. So personally, I think you'd do better to promote your programming not on the basis of it providing that where K-12 doesn't, but supplementing and enlarging the range of opportunities that students might learn those skills in. So that's one point. But my real concern is how will you assure geographic distribution of the funds? Because I have a concern that the way the program, the way the language is shaped in here, line 1.13, extra consideration to community-based partnerships of after-school providers might favor larger urban environments over smaller rural and or outstate environments. So that's my real question, is the geographic distribution.
Representative Mullery?
Okay. Representative and Madam Chair.
Ms. Punin. Go ahead.
Thank you. We, in out-of-school time, we do know that young people build these skills in a continuum of learning opportunities, and we find that after school is particularly complementary to what happens in school and provides an opportunity to often go deeper and do project-based activities that can last longer than can happen during the school day. And I would also note that young people have 2,000 hours of discretionary time, so actually they spend more time outside of school, even if you take out the time that they're sleeping, they still have 2,000 hours of discretionary time each year. So to make sure that they have opportunities for engaged learning that complements what they're doing in school but allows them to go deeper in some of these skill-building areas is really important. So there are lots of partnerships with schools, but also ensuring that young people have exposure to many other settings, as you mentioned. These opportunities also happen in museums, they happen in community centers, they happen in parks, and making sure that young people have exposure to those other ways to apply skills and apply learning is very important. In terms of geographical area, Ignite After School does have membership from across the state. And oftentimes, smaller communities will partner with one another to be able to provide opportunities. So I think that I've seen many partnerships across the state that still can happen in smaller communities as well.
And Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, thank you for that, but I would like to see some actual language in the bill that assures geographic distribution of the pilot funds, because from my perspective, that's critical that, we're sharing the wealth.
Madam Chair,
Mullery?
Representative Brainerd is on the committee that funds it, so okay. She bring that point up there.
Okay.
And I was fortunate to be asked by NCSL, luckily the only legislator from Minnesota, to a conference in Austin, Texas, and she mentioned Microsoft in that. It was put on by all of the big corporations, Dell, 3M, and others that are in Austin, Texas, about the innovative brain development and the executive function brain development. And most of what they were saying was that occurs in outside of the classroom activities. And so they were talking about having a national resurgence in working on that through outside of school especially. And I know that maybe Representative Brainerd is changing schools around that isn't happening the rest of the country very much, but that was what we were kind of indicated to by everyone down there.
Madam Chair, I don't want to belabor the point, but actually, Representative Mullery, you're getting in more trouble with me now by saying that. Only because if indeed it's true that executive function isn't being developed in the school environment, then that's that's shame on us, to me, about our school environment, because we better be doing we better be using that time most effectively to do a 360 development of all of our young people And not that we shouldn't, I really support out-of-school programming, so don't get me wrong about that. But it's not a substitute for the highest quality, most challenging developmental opportunities for our students in the classroom. So anyway, enough. I go on to some other questions.
And I would just throw in a comment that it doesn't say that they're going to be the only one developing these skills on critical thinking, innovation,
no.
problem solving. It is it assisting the student in this, and we do it both in the classroom and out of the classroom. And I think that you can almost get the feel of the different types of activities that go in the classroom and out of the classroom. And I just get sort of a feeling of joy when I see that it's being developed in different ways across the board, and we're attending to the whole student. And I'm sure Representative Brennett would agree. Representative Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, I kind of wanted to piggyback now off of Representative Brinehart. She brought up some excellent points here. We do not want school programming to be a substitute use. You know, I was a little concerned about this discretionary time of 2,000 hours. In my opinion, we need to allow children to be children, experience life without putting down more, you got some time, let's push you more and learn more and learn more, because you know, life as a child goes by oh so quick, and then there's that entire time as adult, living as an adult. And I know growing up I thought, wow, it's really going to be great just to graduate and be on my own, and I really wish I would have not pushed, you know, my childhood so much. And then regarding funding, I know that there's some after-school programming in my district, and parents pay funding toward that. So I'm just wondering, this grant, does that supplement parent funding, or what is the grant actually going to be used for? Is it a scholarships?
Ms. Kunin?
Yes. Representative, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, there as Katie testified, there is a range of free opportunities and fee-based opportunities for many young people across the state. Fee-based opportunities are not accessible, are not available, and it's not an option for them. So one of the things I particularly like to think about is the changing demographics of the state. So we know by 2020, for the first time, we'll have more folks over the age of 65 than we will have younger folks, and a slowing labor force. So that means that to have folks who can work in all of the various work settings, we have to make sure that every single young person counts, and that every single young person is given the opportunity to build these skills, because they're going to be so critical to support our communities moving forward. And so we really want to make sure that every young person has these opportunities, and that no one is unable to participate or have them based on their family's income.
Representative Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So when you say, or to the testifier, so when you say that every child have the opportunities, then so this grant would be available to every facility in the state of Minnesota, then I assume.
Ms. Kunin.
Representative and Madam Chair, at this time, this is a pilot. So we know that with this particular piece of legislation, it wouldn't be available to everyone. As Ignite After School, over time, we would like to see a broader investment in after school so that it is accessible to all. But at this time, we understand that this is a pilot.
Thank you. Representative Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And where, to the testifier, where would the pilot money be going? Is this going to Hopkins, or where is the pilot funding going?
Ms. Kunin.
Yes. Representative and Madam Chair, members of the committee, the bill does send this to the Commissioner of Education to come up with the pilot program and to determine how that would work.
Hey, Representative Franson.
One last question, Madam Chair, and this would be to Representative Mullery. I'm just wondering, aren't CCAP dollars able to be used for after-school programming?
Well, for
Representative Mullery.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Franson. Obviously, they can be used for child care, as you probably know. I don't think they can be used for the type of programming that this is talking about. Do you know? I don't know if there's anybody.
What about
No, they can't. They cannot. Okay. Ms. Brumfield says they can't.
All right. Representative Howe?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm confused a little bit about the pilot project and exactly what it's trying to do, because in my area we've got Kids Stop, we've got Boys and Girls Clubs, and they do this stuff now. So I think this information's already out there. I think they're already doing a fantastic job. So I really question whether we're actually just funding, we're throwing dollars at something that's already been established. That's my concern. I think that they're already doing a fabulous job at some of this work. And I question whether we need a pilot project to do something that I believe in my area, and Kids Stop and Boys and Girls Club are quite successful in establishing this stuff. Can you explain when I look at the critical innovation, when I go to the Boys and Girls Clubs, when I go to the Kids Stop, you can see that going on. So what are we really trying, how are we going to, when you look at this, what is the test mechanism that you're going to do to see that this pilot project is actually successful, and how is that different from what's already going on?
Ms. Kanin. All right, Ms. Williams.
Madam Chair and Representative Howe, I can't speak to the logistics of the bill. However, as a manager and a leader of those kinds of programs, across Minnesota, the growing number of poorer families who could never access Boys and Girls Clubs and Kids Stop and enrichment kinds of programs is growing, and we're trying to come up with more and more scholarship dollars to fund kids who really need the after-school supervised safe activities that would never have the opportunity, as well as pay for buses to get them home. So the costs of doing business have just grown significantly over the last 10 or 15 years for us in our community to make this affordable and accessible for more kids.
Representative Howe?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I know that I contribute, and I know that we do a lot of fundraising for those programs. And I guess if that's what we're doing now to make those programs available and make that work, why doesn't that work in other areas? Why is this animal different than what we already have, in my view, being successfully going on? Because I know that the Boys and Girls Clubs I visit in my area, that's how that funding works. We do fundraisers constantly through that process to make that happen. I guess, does this mean that they can stop their fundraising and they're going to get it from the state?
Representative Mullery?
Madam Chair, Representative Howell, maybe your district is different than a lot of districts in the state, but those do not cover most kids in an awful lot of the districts. The kids are going without this. And so the state has cut way back on what it used to invest in after school. We have to take care of helping the kids in our state that need this help. And just to say that a few kids at one Boys and Girls Club is solving the problems is not an answer.
I might add that in the bill it says the commission will give extra consideration to community-based partnerships, so the groups that have state funding and the funding you're talking about would then have enough to fund extra kids who could not afford to go under those programs. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to share, I agree with Representative Rayner that, you know, and everyone, that learning takes place in many different ways and skills are developed and enhanced through many different experiences. In my district, you know, families are still hurting. You know, we are a poor district. We have no tax base, low property taxes. You know, currently, you know, we don't have many kids. You know, parents are working one and two jobs. Kids are left at home to fend for themselves. There's no alternatives to Parks and Recs. There's a fee for Parks and Recs for after-school programs. You know, so this is a way definitely to give kids those skills that they may not, and maybe they are picking up in school, but maybe they're not for many different reasons. And this is an opportunity for some of that one-on-one time to happen. This is opportunity for them to be in an environment where they're learning from other kids in a way that is not just focused on the academics. It's not just focused on the maps and the STEMs. This is an opportunity to enhance the skills that is taking place outside of the school, but it's also a structural place where they can get some structure into their lives. And, you know, in your community, if things are happening with kids, stops, and Boys and Girls Club, that's a beautiful thing. That's a good thing. But that does not always happen in all communities. And this is a way that we can support kids who are not getting the support that they need in an after-school program to develop the soft skills that they need to go into the workforce. And it happens in many different ways. And this is another way that we can support our kids and create outcomes that's going to create success for all our kids. That does not always happen in every county, in every community.
And thank you. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Williams, right now, probably about right now, my 9-year-old son is at the Meadowbrook Gym playing floor hockey. Because he's participating in Kids & Co., which we do during the legislative session because the Early Childhood Committee meets at such a time that I can't be home for my children. And it's not, you know, I think it's possible to overstate sort of the educational aspects of this. I mean, for a lot of families, before school and after school care are essential, and to the extent that you can make some of that more fun and more enriched, I think that's a good thing. I don't think you have to say that's necessarily for the achievement gap or anything else. I mean, I just think that kids are there and there's an opportunity to create an enriched environment. At the Meadowbrook School, there's pre-K, there is before school and after school. That school is busy with people from early in the morning until late at night. The community uses it, all the time. And so this is all kind of wrapped together. And I suspect a good reason that is true is because the Hopkins District is a comparatively wealthy school district, and that's a particularly well-supported school in a neighborhood that is, it's kind of a magnet school, in fact. So there are a lot of advantages that school has that might not be typical of other parts of the state. And so I think it is important to recognize that you can get a lot out of your school buildings, you can get a lot out of the resources that you have, but it takes extra money to put around there, and I think Hopkins is fortunate to have that. And I'm glad my son isn't doing homework. I'm glad he's playing floor hockey because we paid $20 extra, I think, maybe for that. But he's having fun. He's getting exercise, and those are good things too. And I think that opportunity should be there for all kids, and they don't have to get on the bus to go somewhere else. They can do it right there.
Representative France. No? Any other comments? Any other comments from Representative Mullery? All right, let's vote on this. Representative Mullery renews his motion that House File 2583 be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay.
Nay.
The motion is adopted. Now we have House File 2294. Representative Mullery moves House File 2294 be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. Judiciary.
Judiciary. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, Representative Mullery.
Okay. Basically, this was, I got this from a conference put on by MacArthur Foundation, which works on a lot of new approaches to juvenile, problem or at-risk children. And so at that conference, they had the top expert in the country. I think her last name is Jordan. It's Lisa, and I believe Jordan. who has studied a lot of the different risk assessment methods used in this country and has shown that there's two main ones that have been proven to work really well as far as determining when youth should be incarcerated or not, and looking at whether they then come back for the hearings or for meetings, whether they get into more crime during that time, all of these things. And so one of them is the savory, and I can't remember the other one. There's also, from another study, there's a one created by the state in Kentucky, which she says is not peer-reviewed yet. And so what it's showing is that there's really the effective ways to determine whether or not to lock up youth. And too much of the country is going by the crime that was committed rather than by the individual circumstances of the youth. And so often the youth are actually come out worse when we lock them up. And this, there's, as I said, there's very extensive studies showing how to analyze the different youth, or how each youth is so different and needs to be treated with an assessment that looks at that individual youth and all of their positives and negatives in life. And all this study is doing is saying that we need to step up to the 21st century and look at how do we treat these youth so that we turn them into good, effective citizens. And this just says that the Commissioner of Corrections should look into those studies and determine which ones work, which don't, and make such recommendations to the counties and to the courts. And that's all it is just to try and get us looking at the things that really matter on how we should bring youth that get into the system, how we can straighten them out and have them become effective citizens, and yet at the same time protecting the public from any further recidivism.
Great, thank you. Any comments from the committee members? Anybody else would like to speak on this? All right. We are ready for a vote. All those in, let's see, Representative Mulry moves that 2294 be referred to the Committee on Judiciary. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
Nay.
Motion prevails.
Thank you.
And with that, we stand adjourned.